I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Car companies that destroyed their electric cars in 2006 are now scrambling to be the best producer of the vehicles. A young woman coming of age as an African-American lesbian living in Brooklyn, and two single people who take a different route to parenthood from their married friends. These are just some of the latest independent, foreign, and documentary films addressing current issues. Today, critics Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler tell us how well these films do in shedding light on their subjects. We'll also look at how a 1960s conservative couple in Paris have their life turned upside down, and the movie that won the Oscar this year for Best Foreign Language Film. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Here's some good news for those deeply interested in the plight of the film industry. After a dismal 2011, box office attendance is up about 15% so far this year. Today we'll talk about why, and we'll review a whole mess of new art, foreign, and independent films, including A Separation, the film that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film. It's about an Iranian couple who disagree about leaving the country to raise their daughter. We'll also talk about Friends with Kids, about a childless couple contending with friends who have kids, and a film that has people talking, Revenge of the Electric Car. With us today is our crew of very good film reviewers. Cynthia Haynes taught film for 10 years at the University of Texas at El Paso. And Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning,
Welcome
Steve.
Back.
Thank you.
Steve Walker is a contributing arts reporter at KCUR. Stephen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
And Bob Butler is a longtime movie reviewer for the Kansas City Star. He now blogs at butlerscinemascene.com. Rapid Robert, good morning to you.
Yo.
Well, I know this is we've been harping on this subject of movie attendance for a while because, you know, it plunged to a 16-year low in 2011. But so far, there's good news this year. As of about 2 weeks ago, box office attendance was up nearly 15% from 2011, and revenue was up 14%. What's driving the renaissance, Steve Walker?
I would be hazard to guess. The Lorax? I don't know. Because, as I said to you before the show, Steve, the artist is the second lowest grossing Best Picture Oscar winner since last year, The Hurt Locker, which was number one. So I don't think the audience for independent foreign films and docs, which we love and devote our show to, are particularly going up. But The Lorax had a huge opening and dreadful, you know, excoriating reviews.
How are crowds at the art, independent, and foreign film houses these days, Bob?
Well, I think they're holding steady, but it certainly isn't a growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think possibly concerns the people who are in that business is that the audience is dying out. And I'm not sure that there's a young audience stepping up to embrace this stuff, which...
There's a lot of young audience at True False, the documentary festival. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. Which was encouraging, but I also think that they're watching them on iPads and, and cell phones and... not the way they were intended to be seen. So I think there's still interest in the kinds of films we talk about, but we're just not going to movie theaters to see them.
But a 15% rebound so far this year, Cynthia, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Well, I also think that the higher ticket prices for 3D has driven that also. That's been a factor. And I also think parents want to get out of the house with the kids, and so they've got these movies to see.
I can relate to that feeling at certain times. How about the Oscars were just awarded, and the category for documentary features came up, including the film about The Undefeated, the football film. Several of those films look so interesting to me, and I was thinking, where can I go to see those films?
I'll tell you, Undefeated is going to be released in Kansas City in a couple weeks, I would venture to say, 3 or 4 weeks maybe. To Hell and Back is available on YouTube's movie channel for $3.99. It's an amazing movie about the post-traumatic stress syndrome suffered by this soldier who has been in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's an amazing movie. And that's how I found that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it never got a release here.
But there were also a lot of very good documentaries that we had talked about on this show that didn't get nominated that were worth seeing, like Buck and
Project NIMH.
And other ones like that. So that I think last time we talked about the fact that the procedure is broken has been for many, many years for selecting good documentaries.
So the message here
– seek them out.
You have to seek them out. I was just going to say, if you want to see these films, you have to go out and find them somehow, somewhere, right?
Greenland's opening a documentary next week about Roger Corman, the king of B films, which looks really fun. So you really do – you just have to rely on the Tivoli, the fine arts, Glenwood folks, and Greenland.
Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker already mentioned the True False Documentary Film Fest that took place just recently in Columbia. I hear nothing but great things about this.
Well, everyone here at the station's talking about it. We had quite a few people attend. It's a film festival that began in 2004 in Columbia, Missouri. Two guys, David Wilson and Paul Sturtz, I think his last name. Anyway, put it together. The first time I attended it, I went specifically to see Kevin Willmott's film CSA. Which received a very warm reception in Columbia. They've turned the entire town over for the first weekend of March every year to people who love documentary films. And frequently on this program, we've talked about the fact that some of the better films that we've seen over the course of the year with more drama, more suspense, better cinematography have been the documentaries. So these are some of the best of the best. They've looked at the films that came out of Sundance. They've shown several of those. They also have films that they show without titles because they're going to be premiered at other film festivals, but they want people at the True False Film Festival to get an opportunity to see them.
But we were the second audience in this country to see several of these. They went from Sundance to Berlin, and we were the third audience for several. And the filmmakers are all there for every single film.
And they raved about the experience.
Yeah, they said, you guys, True False is just getting this buzz all over the planet. And several filmmakers said, this is the biggest audience that has seen this film. For several of them. And that was, I'm sure they were thrilled about that. What's so wonderful about it is that for that 2.5-3 days, everywhere you go, whether you're standing in line to see a film, whether you're getting coffee, having a beer, having, you know, falafel and hummus, everyone's talking about documentaries. And I told Cynthia earlier, it's like a planet I wish I lived on every day.
And so when you go, Steve, you see how
I saw films? 8 films in 3 days.
So you're sitting in the theater.
We're sitting at there's like several venues from the Blue Note, the you know rock club. They convert into this incredibly high tech, high def. Every film looks amazing too.
Boy, that sounds like fun, Cynthia.
It is a great time. The couple of films I do want to mention. Let me just also say that there is a conference now that's coordinated with the University of Missouri School of Journalism. And this year it was entitled Based on a True Story, The Intersection of Documentary Film and Journalism. And they realized the value, the importance of this film festival at the University of Missouri. And they're bringing in scholars using their own professors to talk documentaries because it's of interest around the world.
You wonder why Kansas City, Bob Butler, doesn't do something similar.
You know what? Here's this. In every case where you have a successful film festival, you've got one or two visionaries that pull it off.
Right.
Here in Kansas City, Fred Andrews got the Jubilee going and ran it virtually single-handed for 20 years.
Right.
So you need somebody like that, and Columbia just lucked out.
Yeah, they sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What films do you want to point out from the True False, Cynthia?
A film that I was a little reluctant to see, entitled, because there's so many to choose from. I think there were a total of about 38 to 40 feature documentaries that were shown. One was about performance art, Marina Abramović, The Artist is Present. And it's about a performance artist. And as it turns out, Steve had actually seen her performance at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Steve?
Well, she sat in the lobby for 3.5 months from opening to closing.
I've read about her.
And this filmmaker had the foresight to follow her from the very beginning of her planning this event, this performance piece. She is the godmother of performance art. And so I talked to several people all weekend who saw it and said, I wasn't convinced. I didn't believe performance art even really exists. People were crying through this movie, watching her sit across from these people and meet her gaze. And people would line up for hours, if not days, to be able to sit across from the table. But if you just wrap your head around that concept of 3.5 months, opening to closing, she was there. never moved.
That's just amazing.
No,
how was the film?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, it looked at, she had a young artist recreating some of her greatest hits from her early career. And there's footage of her training them. There's footage of her seconds before she starts this 3.5 month ordeal. There's footage of her at the very conclusion of it. I know Cynthia and I looked at each other and went, oh, my God, what a movie.
The filmmakers are required to attend with their films, and that's what also makes it great fun. And the filmmaker said he was a skeptic when he took on this project. And what he accomplished with this film is to convince you that there is value in performance art. And he succeeded in his mission. And he said after this experience, he says he has great respect.
If you just Google her, Marina Abramović, you'll be able to see some clips of her work.
And then there was another film, The Queen of Versailles,
which
is
movie.
Beyond. I think HBO picked it
Magnolia up. Magnolia has it,
Magnolia,
I think.
Yeah. So we'll see it in movie theaters. It is beyond the reality TV shows like Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's about a couple. Initially, it started out their story about building the largest family residence in the United States, 90,000 square feet or something.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who made his money off of
timeshare resorts.
And then 2008 hits, and his business starts falling apart. And this turns into such a drama. And then the relationship between this woman, Jackie, his second or third wife.
Yeah. And their eight children.
And it's bizarre.
And they model the house after Versailles. They were so impressed by Versailles.
Man.
And so for years, the house sits there and falls apart. And
there's
a scene, I have
apart,
to tell
yeah.
you the scene. She's been so coddled in this wealth before their money went away. She goes to Hertz for the first time and she says, and my driver's name will be?
Oh, you're kidding me.
And he went, you just get the car.
You have to drive it.
And that's those moments in the documentary are what make documentaries so incredible. It's this moments of serendipity that the filmmaker could never have
scripted,
planned on.
Hadn't, yeah.
Right. It's, yeah. Couldn't say enough.
And there were
about
also
it.
A variety of very serious films about what's going on in China today. One is Ai Weiwei, Never Sorry, about a Chinese artist who challenges the Chinese government and, in fact, winds up in detention for 80 days. It's a.
And again, the filmmaker couldn't have planned that.
Yeah.
She was following him months before that.
Hmm. If you want to see these films, you have to just – can you put them in your Netflix queue?
You could, sure.
You know, and just see what pops up?
Absolutely.
How about Searching for Sugar Man?
Oh, what a story.
I didn't see that one.
That was around 1969, 1970, 71. There was a singer named Rodriguez. He's a Mexican-American. His father was Mexican. And wrote some of the most beautiful, plaintive songs. Beautiful voice, composer, performer. And his music was discovered by, I guess, Afrikaners in South Africa, and they used his music as an anthem for what they were going through to try to end apartheid in their country. So he was a huge hero. Had no idea that this had happened. His career was going nowhere in the U.S., and so he went back to construction work. And there were all kinds of rumors about his death, how he committed suicide on the stage and whatever. Turns out, the guy's still around, living in Detroit, and it's a beautiful, very moving story.
Wow! That
so look for that,
too.
And then another film that's is involved in a controversy right now, entitled "Bully," which I didn't think was that good of a film.
Me
but
neither.
Harvey
yeah.
Weinstein's distributing it, and he wants every middle school kid in this country to see this film about the damage bullying does to other young children. And it got an R rating initially, and now I think it's PG-13. They really wanted to. Have a PG rating.
Yeah, it does. It doesn't offer any substantive solutions, you know. And the R rating was because there's a filmmaker on a school bus hearing kids talk. I mean, that's how kids talk. So, yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking with our art, foreign, and independent film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Well, opening today, a whole host of new films. Bob Butler, tell us about a film, Pariah.
Pariah. Well, we're all familiar with the coming-of-age story. I think we're all familiar with the coming-out story. Pariah takes a totally different tack. Well, not totally, but it has a heroine, a teenage girl, black, and gay. And she's running up against the prejudices of her parents and the world around her. That sounds incredibly grim, but I found this movie to be pretty much an uplifter. By the time it was over, I was feeling nice about the world. It's got a fantastic actress. Her name is Adeporo Oduye.
Very nice.
who plays a 17-year-old girl. Now, the actress herself is 33 and passes herself off as a teenager, and it is astounding
how she does this. Yeah. It works. Mm.
There's another performance here that blew me off my feet, which is her mother, played by Kim Wayans of the body funny Wayans family, plays a mother who is not an uneducated person. She's not a religious fanatic, but she and the girl's father come from a culture in which homosexuality is just something they don't want to deal with, don't know how to deal with. Can I set us up for this clip?
Yeah.
Well, every mother, I think, wants to have some sort of authority over her daughter. She wants to contribute to the daughter's life. And in this mother's case, it's to get her daughter to stop dressing like a boy. She won't. The boogeyman in the closet has not been raised, but this is a mother talking to her daughter about going to church, about, what you're going to look like, how are you going to dress?
From Pariah.
Lee, are you ready?
Yep.
I said off. And I thought you said you were ready.
I am ready.
You're not going to church in that.
What's wrong with this?
Where's that blouse I bought you?
What's wrong with this? That!
Do what your mom says.
Are you hungry? Here, let me heat this up for you.
That's okay.
Oh, it tastes so much
better. Just leave it.
Lee.
Leave me out of it.
Now go get changed.
Dad, what's wrong with this outfit?
Nothing.
See?
I'm not gonna argue with you.
Do what she says.
Dad.
Ungawa.
And put on a skirt.
You know, I think there's many a mother-daughter relationship can hear that and go, wow, where did they have the microphone when that was going on?
Right, and the nuance is, of course, that this young woman, who's a heroine we've never seen in a movie, a masculine African-American lesbian teenager. Never.
And of course, she's not a loser in any sense. She's a brilliant writer, apparently.
Right, right.
She's going to get a college scholarship. None of that cuts any ice, though, when it comes to certain topics.
And I think the film, why I liked it as much as I did, I didn't love it, but it addresses homophobia in the African-American community and the religious basis of that. And that's a subject that's not talked about very much.
And you didn't love it because...
I just didn't.
You know what? It's a first-time feature by this director, Dee Reese, and first-time directors rarely, hit a smackin' home run, but this is a double or a triple.
It did receive a standing ovation at the Sundance Film Festival, where it premiered, and it will be showing at the Tivoli here in Kansas City, opening today.
Standing O because the subject
matter. A heroine that we haven't seen on screen
before. What's your take?
Before.
I haven't heard
I loved the movie.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I was really moved and affected by it and delighted to see, back to that, Show Me Something I Haven't Seen, and I Love Your Movie, and I really did.
And you know what? What I like about it is that it isn't a judgmental movie. It doesn't condemn her parents, at least not, It shows that everybody's got, these things, these issues they're dealing with, from the father who's a cop and really can't shake the paternalistic thing that's inbred in him, to the mother that is in denial, essentially, about her daughter, and it's creating all sorts of problems.
Well, yeah, and every coming out story can be rocky in its own way, but this is certainly, like I said before, a family we've never seen on screen.
Is this film going to make any of your three to see lists that we'll announce later on?
Absolutely.
The show? Okay, it's that good. That's Pariah. Okay, one other new film, Steve Walker, Friends with Kids, about a childless couple contending with their friends with kids. Tell us
right.
About it.
Well, this is from writer-director Jennifer Westfeld. It's her third film. People will know her by her boyfriend, John Hamm, who's Don Draper on Mad Men. But they've been together 15 years. They're not married. What she's done is written a movie about her and her best friend, who's a male, played by Adam Scott from Parks and Rec. They're not a couple. They're just buddies and live in the same building. And they see their friends evolving into parents, and which takes away from their friend time. You know, the first scene is at a restaurant where Maya Rudolph's character, who's one of their best friends, plays... there's actually four people from Bridesmaids in this film. Maya Rudolph, Chris O'Dowd, who played Kristen Wiig's cop boyfriend in Bridesmaids. John Hamm's in it, and he and Kristen Wiig are married in this film. And so there's the six friends. So the first scene, Maya Rudolph's at a restaurant, announces, we're pregnant, 4 years later is the next scene. And Wig and Ham have a kid, and Maya and her boyfriend, they're not married, have a couple kids. So Adam Scott, Jennifer Westfeld decide, you know, let's do it. We want to have a kid. We don't want to leave this earth without a kid, but we know we would never be a couple that would work mm-hmm. in a relationship. And before I go on, let's listen to the clip, because this is when they're announcing their plan to Maya Rudolph and Chris O'Dowd, their friends.
From Friends with Kids.
We really want to have a kid.
Yeah.
We just don't want to subject that kid to our tragic marriage.
Our tragic marriage?
No, our tragic marriage.
The one we would have.
Us.
I mean, see, we just, we don't want to fall into the trap that most of our friends have. We want to do it in a way that doesn't kill the romance and...
Right.
I mean, the thing is, I'm old. Is a thing.
I get it. You want to have a kid, but without all the shit that comes with marriage.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Well, okay, I wanted this movie to be a lot better than it is. I mean, Bridesmaids, you know, the funniest movie of all of last year, and I like these people a lot. Jennifer Westfeld is smart. She wrote, directed, produced it, and stars in it. But it left a really bitter, nasty taste in my mouth, as it did a fellow female critic who was at the screening. It was misogynistic. It made a lot of unnecessary jokes about genitalia of both sexes. Mm. Just for the sake of doing it, and it wasn't funny.
Wow.
And why am I ending my sentences up like that? Like I'm an eighth grade girl? Anyway, I'll stop doing that because that drives me nuts.
Cynthia, what do you think?
I didn't see it. On Steve's recommendation, I had the opportunity.
It's not a good movie. If you're interested in her, Jennifer Westfeld, Kissing Jessica Stein, which was her first movie and really a lot better movie than this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, how about a film that won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film that a lot of people are interested in these days? It's titled A Separation, Bob Butler.
Wow. This is a movie that makes you glad you're a grown-up. How to begin? Well, let me start by making a statement that might get me in trouble. I'm not sure. I maintain that one reason so many of the great American movies of the classic era were great is that they had to deal with a production code that forced them to find other ways than just saying stuff. Things had to be couched in, you know, images and, this was back when couples in the movies had to have separate beds, that sort of thing. And if you're going to make a sexy movie, people like Hitchcock found ways to do it without stepping on those production code toes. Well, if you're an Iranian filmmaker, what are you dealing with? You're dealing with a censorship apparatus that has the full backing of the theocracy behind it. And if you want to keep making movies, you have to be very careful about where you go, who you criticize, and what you say. Now, the director of A Separation, Ashghar Farhadi, I may be butchering that, I apologize, has made a movie that touches on so many elements of just not just male-female husband-wife relations, but on how those unfold in a society where people, a lot of them, have to maintain the image of piety if they're going to get by. It begins in a government office, green paint on the wall, you know, that sort of thing. A man, his name is Nader, and his wife, Simin, are basically filing for a divorce. They had agreed to move out of the country. Now, when you look at Simin, she's a doctor, and she moves like a person who shouldn't be in Iran, frankly. She's a very modern woman, and you can understand why she wants to go abroad with her husband and their daughter. Nader has agreed to this, but now he's backing out because he has an elderly father, deep in dementia, and he doesn't feel he can abandon his father to leave the country. So the magistrate says, okay, wife, you go live with your parents. Husband, you can keep the daughter and stay in the house. We're going to have a cooling off period. Now, the very fact that the daughter stays with the husband says something about Iran right there. They don't have to talk about it. It just is. The real crux of this movie comes down to a situation that develops when the husband, Nadir, hires a woman to look after his father. She is it's about class. It's about religion. She's very, very fundamentalist. She comes from a working class background, although her husband's been out of work for a while. She brings her own little daughter along to babysit the old man. And Nadir comes home one night to find his father on the floor, tied to the bed. He throws this woman out of his house. The next day, she reports that she was pregnant, she's had a miscarriage, and now the Nadir is charged with murdering the unborn child.
Mm. And that's about the first hour.
Yeah. Man. And now suddenly it becomes a legal thing. It's almost a Perry Mason mystery, but because it's Iran, no one wants to outright lie, but they're kind of fudging the truth. And you don't realize this until the testimony keeps coming in. She may have lost the baby before the incident, and she's looking for a way to make a payday. He's willing to, like, fudge the fact about whether he actually pushed her roughly out the door or just, you know, gave her a gentle nudge. And there's a really telling moment in this film that I found terribly interesting. This woman has agreed to babysit the old man. He soils himself, and before she will clean him up, she calls a religious authority to find out if it's okay for her to take the pants off an old man who isn't a member of her family and wash him down.
I found that scene really fascinating.
That was just unbelievable to me. Well, listen, talk to me, guys. How'd you like it?
I thought it was brilliant.
It's brilliant.
It was nominated for Best Foreign Film and also for Best Screenplay. It should have gotten for Best Screenplay. More American filmmakers ought to see movies like this. And you made a very good point at the beginning of your comments, Bob. It's show us. Let the actors express, you know, what it is that they're feeling, as opposed to having to lay everything out in a
declamatory dialogue
exactly.
or something.
And it feels completely lived in. It feels like you're eavesdropping in these people's apartments because of the handheld camera, because the actors are so good. Yes, it's all in Farsi, but I remember when I first saw it, 10 minutes in, I had something else to do or go somewhere. I canceled my whole plans. I said, I'm watching this movie from beginning to end.
And if there's an opportunity for films to ever bring people closer, help us understand each other's culture, this is one of them. I mean, you get a look behind the curtain of middle-class Iranian society.
Now, I'd be interested, Cynthia, in you giving me a little feedback on this. After the movie was over, my wife Ellen turns to me and says, I really didn't like the husband. And she didn't like him because he came off as kind of patriarchal.
Right. I thought
it's Iran.
Yeah, I know. I tended to think of him as just this poor schlub trying to somehow get through a terrible situation.
Taking care of his dad.
But the fact that this can evoke such different feelings in people, I think, is part of the power of a movie like this.
Yeah. Mm.
So a rare moment here. Three huge thumbs up from our critics.
Very definitely.
It will be on my top 10 list
For the year.
And it did win Kansas City Film Critics Circle's Best Foreign Film, though about half the audience at the voting the night we voted.
I hadn't seen it when they voted.
And I do want to mention that making a movie in Iran can be dangerous. There's a filmmaker named Jafar Panahi who received a 6-year jail sentence and a 20-year ban on filmmaking. He recently made a movie called This Is Not a Film. He had a friend smuggle in a camera and do a documentary about his life as a result of the Iranian government clamping down on what it is he had to say through his film. Anyway, and the film, same thing with the filmmaker here.
This is interesting because the scene of the woman calling the religious authority, an Iranian cleric looking at that would go, good, I'm glad she did that.
Yeah.
Everybody else goes, what the, you know?
It's compared also to that classic Japanese film, Rashomon, which is a term that, you know, that title always comes up when there's ever a story about four or five different people's perceptions of one event. And that's where the second half of this movie goes, is deciding how hard did he push her? Did she really fall? Was she really pregnant? Did she really let the father out of the house? It was just like
these things. It ended perfectly. And you sit there and you think, this is happening in Iran. This happens in the United States. It happens in every country in the world. You worry about your kids. You worry about your parents. How do you deal with them when there are crises in the family?
And did any of you realize, I'll be quick, I didn't know where this movie was going from second to second to second.
Someone described this as Hitchcock meets Bergman.
It's wonderful.
Don't you love that?
It's just so nice to see all three of you enthusiastic about the same film
for once. Does the room feel a little better for you?
A little unusual development here on Up to Date. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about French cinema, the electric car, and a film titled Women on the Sixth Floor. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation yesterday about the role of the railroad in Kansas City's development, that plus the weekend to-do list and a fan's notes, all that can be found at kcur.org. Monday, the Techsperts return to talk about the latest tech gadgets and developments. This hour, we're talking with our film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Bob Butler, and Steve Walker, about the latest and best art, independent, and foreign films. We just raved about a film titled A Separation that won the best foreign film Oscar just last week. Cynthia Haynes, how about a new film, Women on the Sixth Floor?
Another movie I really enjoyed watching. It's set in the 1960s. A well-to-do French couple has to contend with French maids. There are so many other films that tell the story, and I'll mention them very quickly. But I think this is a very good look at the relationship between two cultures, between the, how the Spanish view the French, how the French view the Spanish.
Yeah, but you had said French maids, but so we know we're all on the same page. They're all Spanish maids fled Spain to live in Paris because of Franco.
Right. And
right.
And you know, there's a lot of politics involved, but it is incredibly entertaining and very, very funny. It was written and directed by Philippe Legay, who it's somewhat of an autobiographical story. That he lived, and it the great French comedian Fabrice Luchini plays a wealthy stockbroker, and he has a very demanding wife named Suzanne. They have two very spoiled teenage sons. The obnoxious wife has fired the woman who has worked for them for, I guess, 30 years or so over a minor incident, and they're trying to cope, sort of thinking of Queen of Versailles as I'm watching this movie. Anyway, and a new maid, Maria, comes to visit her aunt, winds up staying, working as a maid for this couple. And it's very touching. It's very a very, very sweet story. And it is so much better than the movie The Help. The more I think about The Help, the more I'm really kind of offended by it. I just think it would. I mean, do you, Steve?
No, I don't have any problem with The Help. But with this, I thought it reminded me of a great Pedro Almodovar movie because two of his favorite players are in it as well. You know, think of France and these posh, prestigious blocks and blocks. All are joined at the sixth floor by one singular hall where all the help lives, all the maids live.
And the janitor.
And so this stockbroker ends up kind of falling for her, but also really realizing for the first time how shabbily they're living up there, you know, a floor above his Louis XIV furniture.
Well, this is the sort of thing the French really do well. I mean, in the wrong hands, it could be pretty clumsy because you've got this sort of uptight bourgeois guy who gets to know some proletariats and suddenly his emotional bookcase opens up.
Yeah.
But this is so cleverly played and so deftly directed that whatever objections I had about the sort of predictable arc of the story vanished.
There also, I wanted to mention The Maid, which was released in 2009, a film from Chile.
Wonderful film.
Live-In Maid with
One,
Norma.
Another wonderful film.
Yeah, Live-In Maid with Norma Alejandro, set in 2001 in Buenos Aires. The Housemaid, a Korean film. And I also thought of Upstairs, Downstairs, and a little bit of Downton Abbey
absolutely.
As I'm watching this.
And I like all of those titles a lot. I was a huge Downton Abbey freak. And it's like, what does it say about me that these movies about the help, the upstairs maids, whether they're Spanish or Korean, I love them all. I mean, they're just very interesting looks at life. I didn't grow up with a maid, believe me.
Yeah. Interesting email here from Patty who writes us, so what's the best source for DVDs of excellent but obscure films? And she wonders, Netflix or someplace else? And I found sometimes when you guys talk about a film, you go back and look at Netflix, it's not there sometimes.
Well, Netflix, there are certainly gaps in their collection, no question about that. You know, you're probably best off just doing a Google search and finding out which vendor carries it, because one of the problems that outfits like Netflix have is that they sometimes simply can't come to terms for one reason or another with the people who own a specific movie. And sometimes it's because they are a big corporation and always want it their way.
Mm-hmm. For a while there, Netflix had more titles than anybody, that's for sure. And then, you know, they stabbed themselves in the left eye when they changed their pricing and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I don't even use them anymore.
So if you're looking for, if Patty's looking for the single best source,
I'd say Netflix or the library.
Mm-hmm.
There, yes.
Don't forget the library.
As an employee of the Kansas City Public Library, I heartily agree with that.
Is it true, Bob?
We get a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah,
we do. We get a lot of obscure titles and documentaries and things like that. They're pretty rigorous down there about things that we talk about on this show. They try to get them as soon as they're on DVD.
And the Western Wyandotte branch, where a fellow critic
over
of ours
Kansas,
also
Kansas.
Works in
yeah.
KCK, also has a really extraordinary film collection.
And I also want to mention the Lawrence Public Library. I just picked up three documentaries from there yesterday.
Interesting to know. Okay, Patty, I hope that helps a little bit. How about some more local events? Cynthia Haynes, the Tivoli, is involved with a film, Revenge of the Electric Car.
They're just going to show one day only, tomorrow. It's part of their community cinema series. It's free, and it's at 11 o'clock. It's a terrific movie called Revenge of the Electric Car. It's the sequel to the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car that came out in 2006 that we reviewed on this show.
Right,
we've been doing it so long. It's also directed by Chris Payne. He did both movies. It's a very entertaining and informative documentary. Who Killed the Electric Car examined the short and the very troubled history of the EV1. General Motors brought it out and then took it off the market and crushed all the cars. And so there was what's really going on here?
And they did that why?
They had good economic reasons, but if you're conspiratorially minded, you see the oil industry playing an evil hand here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So now in the sequel, in Revenge, it looks at the four figures who are involved in the resurrection of the electric car. That includes Bob Lutz of General Motors, who dropped the ball with the EV1 and is now and helped develop the Chevy Volt. The Carlos Ghosn, I knew nothing about this man. He runs Nissan and Renault, and his is a fascinating story about how the Japanese are going after the electric car market. Elon Musk, who made a fortune in the dot-com boom, has been producing the $100,000 Tesla automobile, and his is a very troubled story. And then another guy is featured. The fourth character is Greg Gadget Abbott, who is a mechanic who transforms conventional automobiles into gas-free electric cars. And his story is a major drama. So it's, as I said, it's very informative but extremely entertaining at the same time. So it's worth making a trek over to the Tivoli Theater tomorrow at 11 o'clock to see this film.
And what's the clip we got?
It's Elon Musk, the developer of the Tesla, talking about his car.
From Revenge of the Electric Car.
Tesla is going to put thousands of these cars on the road. But beyond that, really what matters is, are we making a difference in the world? And for us to make a difference in the world, we have to build a lot of cars. You know, until we see every car on the road being electric, we will not stop. So, you know, this is really just the beginning of the beginning. All right.
Elon Musk is a true believer, and he put a tremendous amount of his personal prestige and personal wealth into that company.
Well, so far, this is a very expensive car. Call this the $50 million car. That's about the amount of money that I've invested in Tesla. So it's kind of expensive.
Detroit is doing a lousy job making cars and making money. I mean, it's a disaster. So, you know, the idea that Silicon Valley could do a better job making cars, especially electric cars, is a very powerful one.
Sounds pretty good. That's from Revenge of the Electric Car, showing Saturday at 11 o'clock at the Tivoli, right?
Yes.
Okay. How about a film, Rendezvous with French Cinema?
Yes, I go to the Tivoli website to get the dates and times for all of these wonderful series that they're coordinating down there.
Jerry's bringing in seven new French films. It's in conjunction with Lincoln Center in New York, which is doing it almost simultaneously. We were allowed to see a couple of them, and there's some really fun titles. Like, I'd go to their website. The one I would most recommend is probably The Well Digger's Daughter, Cynthia.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Bob, do you have one?
Can you tell me, was that World War I or World War II?
I don't know.
See, there you go. It's a romance about a young working-class woman who becomes pregnant by a young aviator. And when he's reported killed in the war, what
World
goes
War
on
One.
In her...
It was World War One.
All right, if you say so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what else would you recommend from this?
Well, there's one called 17 Girls, which is a completely contemporary fictional film, but based on a true story about a small French town where 17 of the young women in the high school got pregnant.
Actually, it was an American town.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Oh. But they're all, it's like, raises really interesting questions about the European approach to sex education. And when push comes to shove, they do a lot more explicit education than we do in America. But the town still freaks out.
Well, it's basically about the psyche of teenage girls and them wanting to belonging, thinking of themselves as a gang, and what holds their gang together. Let's all get pregnant.
Hmm.
So go to the Tivoli's website, tivolikc.com, and that festival is from March 16th through the 20th.
There's also a series of live broadcasts, performing arts live events you wanted to highlight here.
No, I don't have those in front of me.
It's part of the Tivoli Cinema's performing arts broadcasts, and on Sunday, this Sunday, there'll be a performance by the Bolshoi Ballet. Then following will be La Boheme, the National Theatre of London, Comedy of Errors, the Royal Ballet, Romeo and Juliet. Fantastic series, definitely worth seeing.
And a new trend in arts houses, right?
And in keeping those doors open.
Right, right.
Okay. A Japanese film festival.
Steve, yeah, that's tomorrow and Sunday. It's a collaboration between the Kansas City Art Institute, the Heart of America, Japan America Society. Interesting that this is the second year for it. They're showing five different titles at both the Nelson and across the street at the Epperson Auditorium on the Art Institute campus. They're showing a classic like Tokyo Story, which is from the 50s, I believe. And they're showing the Oscar-nominated documentary short. We talked about where can you see these?
Yeah.
The Tsunami and the Cherry Blossom. They're showing that tomorrow and Sunday. And they let me see Norwegian Wood, which is the newest film from 2010. Directed by the guy who made Scent of Green Papaya and Cyclo. If you saw those films, this guy has an eye that's amazing. And this movie is just ravishingly beautiful. It kind of follows some college kids coming into their sexuality in the 1967. Set in Japan, in the urban center, and out in the most beautiful scenery you can't imagine. It's so beautiful. It's called Norwegian Wood. They're showing that twice.
What's going on at the library, Bob?
Well, when I say the words John Ford, I'll bet you think of John Wayne riding a horse through Monument Valley. Because, of course, John Ford made some of the greatest westerns of all time, like The Searchers. But our current film series down at the library in the Durwood Film Vault at the Central Library, by the way, downtown, is called Not a Cowboy in Sight. And these are the non-western films of John Ford. And you say, what? Well, listen to some of these titles. The Grapes of Wrath. How Green Was My Valley, They Were Expendable, Mogambo, Wee Willie Winkie, the best Shirley Temple movie ever.
Says who?
Mr. Roberts and The Quiet Man, which is probably one of the greatest Irish love stories you will ever see. These are showing at 6:30 on Mondays. They're showing at 1:30 on Saturdays in the Film Vault. They're free. The first two shows were darn near standing room only, so... good stuff.
Let me add that the Japanese Film Festival is free as well, but it's also a benefit for the tsunami victims. Written. And in particular, I'm sorry, I really do want to get this correct, for the people who live around the Sendai earthquake and the tsunami about a year ago this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking with our film critics about some of the best art, independent, and foreign films now showing. How about some coming attractions in one film? It's titled In Darkness, based on actual events during the Holocaust. A Polish sewer worker in Nazi-occupied Poland hides a desperate group of eight Jews for 14 months in the rat-infested underground. It was nominated for a foreign language Oscar. What about it?
It's very, very good, and it's supposed to be coming in a matter of, again, a couple weeks.
We thought we would have more films to talk about today, and the artist has been held over, and so the system is a little clogged, and we're not getting to see.
Iron Lady's holding on because people want to see Meryl Streep's
which is great.
Oscar-winning performance. Finally, she won a third one.
Is that worth seeing?
Oh, yeah. I think her performance, is extraordinary.
Her performance is great, but the film got sort of mediocre reviews.
I liked it.
I loved it. And Hugo is also showing at Crown Center, another film that's occupying screens.
Do you recommend a Margaret Thatcher film?
I do, but I have mixed feelings. I mean, I'm watching this performance and my jaw is on the floor. I cannot believe she pulled this off. I just tend to think that the movie is a little ambivalent about its subject.
Yeah, it's got its problems.
Because Margaret Thatcher, while perhaps a female icon, is not what you'd call a feminist icon. There are two different things
there. Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
There's some really extraordinary movies coming around the pike, and by the next time we're on, there'll be some titles like In Darkness probably playing.
Right, and Declaration of War.
Tell us about Declaration of War.
That's a fabulous movie about a young filmmaker and her boyfriend whose toddler gets cancer.
Has a brain tumor.
And it's based on their actual lives, but they've managed to make this extraordinary film that's a tribute to the kid, to the medical society, and their love and how they endure.
It's a documentary. It's not. It's not.
But it really happened to the woman who made the film and wrote
it. Wow.
And it sounds like it's downbeat. It's not. It's just beautiful.
Okay. And a film, W.E.
Well, what's Madonna's movie about Wallace Simpson
and the King of England, basically.
Yeah, Edward.
Directed by Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good. It's fun.
It was actually nominated for Costume Design Oscar.
Hmm.
There's a scene that's the most fun, probably the only really fun scene in the movie is, though it's set in the 30s, she scores one of their parties to the Sex Pistols pretty vacant, which was pretty fun. And it made no sense, but it was great fun.
Bob Butler, how about Once Upon a Time in Anatolia?
Boy. I found myself, I'm not sure if I can say I like the movie, but I was utterly fascinated. It is a long, slow movie.
That's fascinating.
It takes place
though.
In Turkey, and it begins with a group of men. There is a doctor, there is a magistrate, there is a chief of police, there are a bunch of guys with shovels, and there are two guys, prisoners, who have killed somebody and dumped the body out in the sticks, and they're driving around at night with the prisoners trying to get them to find where they buried the body. And if that doesn't – all these dead ends.
It sounds farcical, but it is funny at times, but it's also –
But it's also very profound.
I think it is a profound movie. Yeah.
But it's one of those things that sort of – it's not – don't expect a fast-paced movie.
No. No.
Is it boring?
Set in Turkey.
No, it isn't.
No, not at all.
You know, it's one of those long day's journeys into the next morning. And it's about these guys who at various stages in their lives have sort of like – frozen.
And what I saw it about, what it was about to me is the effect on people whose jobs on a daily basis are murder and death and how they cope with it.
You know, it is.
And they come from different, the police,
but
the coroner.
But you sit there and you think this could be Chicago, this could New York, but it's in Turkey.
Okay.
And the specificity of that makes for some very interesting stuff.
Yeah, and the last 10 minutes are among the most chilling.
There are times when
I
thought, when is this taking place? Is this the 50s? Is this the 60s? Then you realize someone has a cell phone.
Right.
Steve Walker, there's a film, Rampart, about a bad cop on the ropes and features Woody Harrelson.
Well, there was until it closed last night at Cinemark, kept it for 1 week. Great performance by Woody Harrelson.
And he was there was talk of him being nominated for Best Actor.
Right, he gives a great performance as a
bad cop.
Bad boy.
Is it
bad
on,
cop.
Not on,
it,
on DVD
it should
yet.
Be on DVD in the matter of weeks.
I was going to say,
yeah,
quick turnaround on that.
The one I want to see is We Need to Talk About Kevin. It is a suspenseful.
And that's the title of a film you're saying.
Yes.
Sorry.
It's coming in a couple weeks. We're making promises we have no responsibility over. We don't run the theaters, but
it's on.
You should.
It's on the
on the schedule.
I nominate you.
We hope to fill them with people for these great films, but we don't run them.
Well, we need to talk about Kevin as a film about a suspenseful psychological drama that explores the concept of nature versus nurture.
Tilda
Swinton plays a woman who at the beginning is living alone and every morning gets up and has to wash the graffiti off her house that has appeared overnight, calling her all sorts of terrible names. Over time, we realize through flashbacks, she raised Patty McCormick of the Bad Seed, a little boy who played by three actors who are the creepiest kids I've ever seen. They seem to be emotionless. She tries her best to open them up, to be a mother to them. They hate her, but they wrap the dad, played by John C. Reilly, around their finger, and it leads up to a Columbine-type situation.
Okay. It's an extraordinary movie.
Just a few seconds left. Each week when you guys come on, you nominate your three to see, the top three films you recommend right now. Cynthia Haynes, yours are?
Very definitely. A Separation, Pariah, and I'm thinking of changing the artist to Women on the Sixth Floor. I think it's a special film that people ought to see.
I'd say The Artist because people aren't seeing it. A Separation, absolutely, and Women on the Sixth Floor.
All right, Pariah, Separation, Women on the Sixth Floor.
Okay,
there we go.
Agreement here among our critics. All their three to see are on our website each week at kcur.org. And thanks to Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
Fun.
As always. Monday on the program, the Techsperts are back to talk about the latest tech gadgets and developments. Our music is by Bobby Watson and the UMKC Conservatory of Music Concert Jazz Band. We had help today from KCUR's Kathleen Pointer, Danny Alexander, Maria Carter, and Kim Noble. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend all. So much going on around town this weekend. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.